All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going to be talking about something that's, well, it's a little bit heavy, not going to lie.
Yeah, definitely a tough one.
Yeah, it's at the crossroads of medicine, law, and the whole concept of justice, you know.
Exactly. Lots of overlap there.
Exactly. And the specific issue we're going to be trying to untangle is this whole question of executing people who have mental illness.
Always a thorny issue, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And to really help us understand the nuances of it, the case we're going to focus on today is Singleton v. Norris. Heard of that one?
Oh yeah, Singleton, classic case. It's a 2003 decision from the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay.
And it really grapples with a question that's just so fundamental.
Lay it on me.
Can a government actually force someone to take medication that they don't want so
Oh,
they
that.
become competent enough to be executed?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's really about as stark a conflict as you can get, between the state's power
Right,
to
girl.
carry out a sentence and the individual's rights, especially when you're talking about someone whose mental capacity is in question.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for all the law students out there who are listening to this,
Always good to have you with us.
yeah, welcome, welcome. This case, Singleton, it's like a master class in how those big, important legal principles that you're learning about, you know, how they actually get applied to the real world.
Definitely.
And sometimes, you know, it feels like they get stretched
Oh, for sure.
pretty far when you're dealing with these ethical dilemmas that are just so tough to sort out, you know.
Yeah, and this one will definitely give you some food for thought. How about that?
Oh, absolutely. So to get us started, let's talk about the man at the center of this whole thing, Charles Singleton.
All right, so Charles Singleton. He was convicted back in 1979 for murder, and it was, a brutal murder.
Okay.
Victim's name was Mary Lou York. It happened during a robbery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the evidence against him was pretty overwhelming. There was eyewitness testimony. He actually confessed. So he was sentenced to death.
Right, but it sounds like the real crux of this case is what happened after that, right, in terms of his mental health.
That's exactly right. Singleton's story while he was on death row, that's what makes this case so complicated.
Gotcha.
Because over time, he developed really severe paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, significant psychotic episodes. And he needed medication, antipsychotic medication, just to function.
Okay, so he's on death row. He's got this serious mental illness. What happens next?
Well, it's not a simple story. It wasn't like he was just taking his meds willingly all the time.
Yeah, good.
Starting back in 87, there were periods where he would refuse treatment and they
Right.
had to involuntarily medicate him. Then in 1997, they got a court order.
Okay.
And this court order, it followed the guidelines that were set out in another Supreme Court case that you might be familiar with,
Oh, which one?
Washington v. Harper. Remember that one?
Yeah, Harper.
Yeah, so Harper, it basically allowed for prisons to force inmates to take medication for safety reasons or if there was a legitimate medical need.
Right. So they were relying on Harper to medicate Singleton. And I guess that kind of gets us to the core of this whole legal puzzle.
You got it.
So the meds, they actually work.
Right.
Singleton becomes mentally competent,
Right.
but then you're left with this question that's, I mean, it's kind of disturbing, you know?
Yeah.
Is it okay, legally, ethically,
Yeah.
to execute someone
Yeah.
when their sanity basically hinges on the drugs that the state is giving them?
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It's a huge question.
Yeah, and that's what Singleton's lawyers were arguing.
I
They
get it.
said, look, this is a violation of the Eighth Amendment.
All
You
right.
can't just force someone to take medication to make them competent enough to die.
Yeah.
They were saying that it basically turns dockers into,
Yeah.
participants in the execution,
Right.
which is a huge ethical dilemma, for medical professionals.
Okay. It seems like a conflict of interest almost, right?
It's a tough one, definitely.
So, to kind of unpack the Eighth Circuit's decision in this case,
Right.
we need to look at the legal background, right?
Absolutely. There are a couple of other Supreme Court cases that are really important here.
Okay, let's hear them.
You got Ford v. Wainwright. This one was from 1986.
Okay, Ford v. Wainwright. What's the big takeaway from Ford?
So Ford basically said that you can't execute someone who is mentally incompetent at the time of their execution.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
Right. The reasoning behind that is like it's cruel and unusual punishment to put someone to death if they don't even understand what's happening to them.
Right, they don't get it.
Exactly. They don't understand why they're being punished. It's inhumane.
Totally. And then a few years later, we have Washington v. Harper. That one was in 1990.
Right, 1990.
Now, Harper dealt with something slightly different, but still related. What did Harper tell us?
Okay, so Harper said that prisons, they can forcibly medicate inmates if, you know, they're a danger to themselves or others, or if they have a really serious medical need.
Right, right. Makes sense, to keep everyone safe.
Exactly. And that's allowed even if the inmate doesn't want it. You know, they can object, but it's still permissible.
Okay, so the court's saying the state has this interest in safety and in providing care.
Right. So now we have Ford saying you can't execute someone who's incompetent, and we have Harper saying you can force medication in certain situations. So when you get to Singleton, the Eighth Circuit basically had to figure out, like, how do these two things fit together?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it seems like they kind of clash.
Well, they do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if the main reason you're medicating someone is for a legitimate medical reason, like they're a danger to themselves.
Right.
Does it become unconstitutional if a side effect of that medication is that they become competent to be executed?
It's such a messy question, and it feels like there's no easy answer. Yeah. So how did the Eighth Circuit actually try to resolve this?
They came up with something called the primary purpose test.
The primary purpose test.
Yes. And the basic logic here is that as long as the main reason, the primary reason for giving someone the medication is not just to make them competent for execution.
Okay.
Then, you know, it might be okay.
Okay.
They were basically saying, look, if there's a legitimate medical reason and the competency for execution is just a side effect,
right,
then it could be permissible under Harper.
Okay, but it sounds like they didn't just leave it at that. They had a specific test, right?
That's right. They actually laid out a three-part test.
Okay, let's hear those three prongs.
All right, first, the treatment, the medication, it had to be medically appropriate. Like, it's got to be the right treatment for the person's condition.
Makes sense.
Second, the medication cannot be given solely to make the person competent for execution.
Okay, so there has to be some other reason.
Exactly. There has to be, like, a genuine medical need there. And then third, there can't be any less intrusive ways to achieve the same goals. Like, you know, if there's another way to keep the person safe or treat their condition without forcing medication,
right,
then you got to try that first.
Okay, that's a pretty specific test. So how did they apply this to Charles Singleton?
Well, the court, they said that Arkansas had met all three parts of that test.
Okay.
They were really emphasizing the fact that Singleton had this severe mental illness, right? Paranoid schizophrenia. And when he was off his medication, he was a danger, like a real serious danger to himself and others in the prison.
Right. So they're saying there's a real need there.
Exactly. There's a legitimate medical purpose for the medication that goes beyond just like prepping him for execution.
But, you know, you mentioned the medical purpose, and that brings up a question that I was thinking about. What about those ethical guidelines for doctors?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The AMA, they have some pretty strong opinions about doctors being involved in executions.
Exactly. Like, was that even considered in the Singleton case?
It's interesting you bring that up because the court kind of sidestepped that whole issue.
Really?
Yeah. They basically said that they would defer to the professional judgment of the prison's medical staff.
So they're basically saying as long as the prison doctors sign off on it?
Yeah, as long as they're following the rules, the medical protocols.
Okay.
And the primary purpose isn't only execution, then it's legally okay.
So they're kind of dodging that ethical debate, it sounds like.
A little bit, yeah. And that's something that a lot of critics have pointed out, you know.
And it doesn't sound like everyone on the Eighth Circuit panel was on board with this reasoning, right?
Oh, absolutely not.
They had some pretty strong dissenting opinions.
Oh, for sure.
So what were some of the main concerns that were raised in those dissents?
One of the most powerful ones came from Judge Heaney.
Okay.
He wrote this dissent that really focused on what he called artificial competence.
Artificial competence.
Yeah, or masking psychosis was another way he put it. And his argument was basically that the medication, it doesn't actually cure the underlying mental illness. You know, it just kind of suppresses the symptoms. So you get this like superficial appearance of competence. Yeah. But he was asking, is that really enough to satisfy Ford v. Wainwright?
Right.
You know, like the whole point of Ford is to prevent the execution of someone who doesn't truly understand their punishment.
Right. Who can't comprehend what's happening.
Exactly. And he was questioning if this drug-induced competence, is it really genuine competence?
Really gets at the heart of what competence even means in this context.
Absolutely.
What about the other dissents? What were some of their arguments?
So Judge Murphy, his dissent was really about the evidence or lack thereof.
Okay.
He wasn't convinced that they had a clear enough picture of Singleton's actual mental state, even when he was on the meds.
So he's saying, hold on, are we sure he's actually competent? Or are we just seeing the effects of the drugs?
Exactly. He was worried that they weren't really getting to the bottom of it.
And was there another dissent?
Yeah, Judge Loken, he wrote one too.
Okay, and what was his focus?
His was more about the procedural stuff, you know, all those appeals that Singleton was filing.
Right, right. Habeas corpus and all that.
Exactly, habeas corpus. And Judge Loken argued that some of his claims were actually barred under AEDPA.
Oh, AEDPA, right. The Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. It really limits what federal courts can do.
Exactly. It makes it a lot harder to get relief in federal court if you've already gone through the state court process.
So even with all these dissenting voices, it sounds like Singleton was still executed.
Yeah, sadly he was in 2004.
It's just such a weighty issue. And it seems like this case is still relevant today.
Oh, for sure. Singleton is still cited all the time.
The precedent, right?
Yeah, and that whole primary purpose test.
Yeah.
It's been used in a bunch of states, you know, probably around 15 or so, in cases that involve forced medication for death row inmates.
Which just, I don't know, it just brings up all these huge questions about where medicine and law overlap in these situations, you know?
For sure. It's like opening up this Pandora's box of ethical dilemmas and practical problems.
Because if you can medicate someone to make them competent for execution,
mm-hmm.
where does it stop?
Exactly.
Like, is it really possible to separate the medical purpose of the treatment
yeah.
from the fact that it also makes them eligible for execution?
It's a great question, isn't it? Like, especially when there's an execution date looming, how can those two things not get mixed up in everyone's minds?
Right, right. And it almost makes you worry that there's an incentive to over-medicate these inmates.
Yeah, definitely.
Not to give them the best possible care, but to make sure they're competent enough to be executed.
It's a chilling thought, for sure.
And then, you know, what about the doctors who are working in these prisons?
Yeah, it makes you wonder if they're held to the same ethical standards as doctors on the outside.
Right, because they're also part of the system, right?
Exactly. Like, their obligation is to the state and the safety of the institution, which could sometimes clash with, you know, traditional medical ethics.
It really puts them in a difficult position.
It does, yeah.
And it also makes you wonder, could this logic be applied to other conditions besides psychosis?
That's a great question. Like, what about inmates with, you know, intellectual disabilities or dementia or other things that might affect their competence?
Right.
It really gets to this core tension, you know, between what the law allows and what feels ethically right.
Because something can be legal, but still feel wrong.
Absolutely.
Okay, so for all our law students out there who are still with us, let's zoom out for a second and think about the big picture takeaways from Singleton.
Mm-hmm.
What are the core legal principles that are at play here?
Okay, so this case, it's a perfect example of how the Harper Doctrine, you know, the one about forced medication.
Yeah, Harper.
It intersects with the Ford Doctrine, which is the one that says you can't execute someone who's incompetent.
Okay, so it's all about how these two big cases fit together.
Exactly. Like, when you have these new situations, these ethical dilemmas, how do you apply those old principles?
And that's what Singleton is trying to do,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And I think it's really important for law students to focus on that distinction the court makes.
Oh, yeah.
Between treating someone's mental illness and the consequence of that treatment being that they become competent for execution.
Right. It's a fine line.
It is.
Yeah.
And that whole primary purpose test.
Oh, yeah.
That's the key, right?
Absolutely. That's what the majority opinion is hinging on.
And don't forget the procedural stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really.
Singleton's case went through multiple appeals.
Right.
That's where AEDPA comes in.
Yeah.
And that really limits what federal courts can do.
It does, yeah. And you can see that play out in Judge Loken's dissent.
And I think one thing that's really important to remember, and this is something that comes up all the time in law school, is that there's a difference between what's legally permissible, you know, what the Constitution allows according to the courts,
right,
and what's ethically right.
Oh, huge difference.
And those two things don't always match up.
Not always, no.
Okay, and one last point I want to make just to kind of clear up any confusion. Some people might think that Singleton created, like, a whole new set of rules for how we deal with medication and death row inmates.
Right, right.
But it's not really like that.
No.
It's more about applying existing law, especially Harper,
okay,
to a new situation, a new context.
Right.
Which is, you know, giving medication after an execution day has been set.
So it's an application case, not a revolution.
Right, exactly. Building on what was already there.
Okay, so to sum it all up, what's the big takeaway from Singleton v. Norris?
Well, I think one way to look at it is that courts they often prioritize the finality of those criminal sentences.
Right, like the idea that once someone's been sentenced,
yeah,
you know, the legal system wants to bring it to a close.
Exactly, that's the goal.
To have that closure.
And if the medical procedures, like the medication and stuff,
if it all looks legitimate on paper, you know, follows the rules, then they're often okay with it, even if there are all these ethical questions swirling around.
Even if it feels a little unsettling.
Yeah,
know?
For sure.
Like we're basically manipulating someone's mental state to carry out a punishment.
It's heavy stuff, yeah.
So on that somewhat heavy note, I'm going to leave you with one last thing to ponder.
Oh, always good to have something to think about.
Right. Yeah. What are the bigger implications here?
Yeah.
When the state gets involved in altering someone's mental state through medical means, specifically to carry out a punishment.
Right.
Like, what does that say about us as a society?
Yeah.
What does that mean for the medical profession?
Big question.
It's something to think about, right?
Absolutely. And that's what we're here for. To make you think.
Yeah.
So next time on the Deep Dive, we're going to shift gears a little bit, but we're going to stay in this really crucial area where law and morality intersect.
Oh, I love that.
Right. We're going to be talking about Roper v. Simmons. This one is all about the sentencing of juveniles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Another landmark case. But until then, keep those brains working. Keep asking those tough questions.
Always. Always.